Welcome to the SermonCoach.com podcast. I'm your host, Dean Wilson. We're talking today with Dr. David Maines, the executive director of SermonCoach.com. It's our desire to help pastors create effective, life-transforming sermons. In today's podcast, we continue an analysis of the Sermon Coach method for developing life-transforming sermons. Just a reminder that a minister using the Sermon Coach method begins by choosing a subject. Then the minister must determine what response he or she desires from the congregation. Next, the minister must provide some how-tos that will clearly and concisely point the congregation to the desired response. Next, the minister must suggest a reasonable time frame or how long it will take before the congregation begins to realize the value that will come from their response. Lastly, the minister should construct a single sentence that sums up the subject and response. Such a sentence will give the congregation a memory hook to help them remember the substance of a given sermon. As one who preaches, you can use the Sermon Coach method to develop each individual sermon that you preach. You can also use it to develop an entire series of messages. In today's podcast, we continue a set of podcasts that will illustrate how to create an effective sermon series. To do so, we're sharing a series of messages that Dr. David Maines wrote for his Chapel of the Air radio broadcast nearly 30 years ago. These broadcasts center on the book of Isaiah. And the complete series consists of 19 sermons, including 4 dramatic presentations. Using the concepts illustrated by this series, a minister could begin a similar series in September and preach all through the fall months, culminating in Advent. Today's message is entitled, The Greatest Is No More. It originally aired on Wednesday, October 12, 1983. David, we're anxious to hear what you have to say.
Almost everyone can identify Muhammad Ali. He calls himself the greatest, and without question, he's been the most colorful heavyweight champion in the history of boxing. Recently, when beaten badly in his attempt to regain the crown an unprecedented fourth time, the event was kind of sad. No question about it, an era had ended. The former champ's reflexes were not what they used to be. The sting was gone from his punches, and the time had come to recognize the inevitable. Could this not also be an accurate description of the southern kingdom of Judah under the preaching of Isaiah? During this prophet's long 8th century BC ministry, the northern kingdom of Israel had actually been knocked out by the tough Assyrians. In the south, where Isaiah lived, there would be some wobbly rounds as these same invaders overran much of the land, but Jerusalem, the capital, would weather the storm. Actually, this was due to God's intervention on behalf of a very righteous young king, Hezekiah. Unfortunately, the revival under Hezekiah was not sustained when Manasseh, his son, mounted the throne. So basically, the words of Isaiah were addressed to a nation that had known greatness but now was in decline. The material relates initially to a period of growing evil throughout the land, which culminated in the wicked reign of Ahaz. Then there's the positive interlude with Hezekiah, but it's back to backsliding once Manasseh is crowned. That's why chapters 40 through 66 contain further warnings about what results when sin abounds. It's almost like Isaiah comments, O people with such an illustrious past, are your senses now dulled? Your eyes don't seem to see as clearly anymore. Around your heart there's fat. For like a fighter past his prime, Judah was on the skids, and it was really quite sad. In personal study, I've gone through these 66 chapters and made lists of the sins Isaiah specifically names. There's not time to review them all, but this sampling will give you an idea, and also might scare you regarding how closely present-day conditions parallel that past time. For example, Judah's religious observances were far more traditional than they were vital. That was the subject of the broadcast 2 visits back. Yesterday, her idolatry was discussed. To these, one needs to add national pride, lust, bloodshed, and murder, rejecting God's laws, lying, covetousness, the slaying of children, greed, adding house to house, field to field, etc., not honoring the Lord's Day, quarreling and fighting, an abundance of fortune-tellers, not being just to the needy, robbing the poor, spoiling widows and the fatherless, women becoming hard and calloused, people living only for the moment. We call it existentialism. Isaiah put it this way, "You live for joy and gladness and say, let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die." Being blind to what God was doing was another flaw. Like what we call secularism, the prophet described it thus, "They do not regard the deeds of the Lord or see the work of his hands." Then that generation, like ours, also decided to make up their own rules. Here's Isaiah. "Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Woe to those who are wise in their own eyes and shrewd in their own sight." Further, "Woe to those who are heroes at drinking wine and valiant men in mixing strong drink, who acquit the guilty for a bribe and deprive the innocent of his rights." Well, each visit I've been giving you chapters to read to supplement what I've been sharing. One of two I'd suggest this lesson is Isaiah 59, a scathing chapter with a surprise ending. Here's just one poetic verse, Isaiah 59:5. "They hatch adder's eggs. They weave the spider's web. He who eats their eggs dies, and from one which is crushed, a viper is hatched." Because people have a tendency to live by comparisons, well, at least I'm better than, or not as bad as, during such periods, there's always the problem of the faithful letting down their standards slightly, just so the gap is not intolerable, for God's leaders to enjoy just a little too much luxury, to covet a wee bit more acclaim than is healthy, to excuse sins in areas that aren't gross, and so on. That's why the other chapter I want you to read is Isaiah 6. Isaiah 59 and Isaiah 6. Here, toward the beginning of the prophet's words, we have recorded what was undoubtedly the most traumatic experience of his life. In the year that King Uzziah died, the sequence of rulers was Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, then Hezekiah. Uzziah was the strong king who was smitten by God with leprosy for offering incense in the holy place. "In the year he died," Isaiah writes, "I saw the Lord. He was sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. Above him stood the seraphim, probably an order of supernatural or angelic beings. Isaiah says, each had 6 wings, and one called to the other and said, 'Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory.' And the foundations of the threshold shook at the voice of him who called, and the house was filled with smoke." And Isaiah reports, he said, "Woe is me, for I am lost. For I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. For my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts." All other relationships had no meaning now, only this, that standing before God, Isaiah knew himself to be inherently far less holy than he should be. "Then flew one of the seraphim to me," he continues, "holding in his hand a burning coal, which he had taken with tongs from the altar. And he touched my mouth and said, 'Behold, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away and your sin is forgiven.' The symbols are not as important as the fact that Isaiah was truly guilty, and his lips, the lips of probably the most righteous man on earth, needed purging. The strange text continues, "And I heard the voice of the Lord saying, Whom shall I send, and who will go for us? Then I said, Here am I, send me. And he said, Go and say to this people, Hear and hear, but do not understand. See and see, but do not perceive. Make the heart of this people fat, and their ears heavy, and shut their eyes, lest they see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and understand with their hearts, and turn and be healed. Then I said, How long, O Lord? And he said, Until cities lie waste without inhabitant, and houses without men, and the land is utterly desolate, and the Lord removes men far away, and the forsaken places are many in the midst of the land. And again, it's all so very sad. What a terrible word to be given by the Lord. Fortunately, as we study this book further, we'll find it's not primarily a message of doom, but rather one of hope. That incredible scope of what Isaiah reveals God to be planning will have to wait, but let me just touch one more passage so I can personalize what is being shared this visit. Chapter 33, the prophet asks a most appropriate question. The sinners in Zion are afraid. Trembling has seized the godless. Who among us can dwell with the devouring fire? Who among us can dwell with the everlasting flame? Answer. He who walks righteously and speaks uprightly, who despises the gain of oppressions, who shakes his hands lest they hold a bribe, who stops his ears from hearing of bloodshed, and shuts his eyes from looking on evil, he will dwell on the heights. Thus, in a day of increasing compromise, Isaiah is granted a vision of God, and the effect it has on his life is to be even more circumspect than before. And so in our day, let each of us be wary of a sense of sin that more and more is dulled by our surroundings. Rather it be that even in a setting of wickedness, God's true servants would manifest an extremely high standard of personal righteousness, shaking our hands lest they take money that is not ours, closing our eyes so as not to look on evil, plugging our ears rather than listening to it, walking righteously, not in a self-righteous fashion, but in a Christ-like manner, despising sin, but befriending the sinner. Again, even in a setting of wickedness, God's true servant should manifest an extremely high standard of personal righteousness. Why? Because I believe that could God's people see a vision of him today, they would respond much like Isaiah did. Not just, God says our nation is in trouble. It could well be her best days lie with the past and not the future. It's kind of sad. Yes, but also, woe is me. Now I am undone. I am a man of unclean lips who dwells in the midst of a people of unclean lips. And my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts, and being allowed to view him as he is, a great sadness encompasses me that I am not what I should be. O Father, show us yourself, and having gazed upon your glory, let us then be fit for Isaiah-like work in this generation.
Thank you, David, for a powerful illustration of how to preach the third sermon in a series of messages designed to assist the congregation in their spiritual formation. As you listened, were you able to pick out the subject, the response? How about the key sentence? As we continue through this series in future SermonCoach.com podcasts, we hope you will use these as a very practical aid to honing your skills in using the Sermon Coach method of sermon development. We also hope this series will spark some creative ideas of your own. As always, we thank you for joining us for this time together. You've found this SermonCoach.com podcast at our website, SermonCoach.com. That's sermon-coach.com. We invite you to browse through the rest of our website. We have resources there to help pastors create effective, life-transforming sermons. And we invite you to join us for our next SermonCoach.com podcast.